Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. Get that, the fifth leading cause of death in the United States, according to the American Stroke Association. And the most critical life-saving factor in a stroke is the time to treatment. The longer a stroke goes untreated, the more permanent and severe the damage. Joining us in the studio today, and we are so lucky to have her for Medical Monday, is Dr. Allison Nohara. She's a board-certified interventional neuroradiologist, a rare specialty right in our region. She specializes in minimally invasive, image-guided techniques to treat diseases of the head, neck, and spine, specifically strokes. Dr. Nohara earned her medical degree from Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. She completed her residency in radiology at Emory University and her fellowship in interventional neuroradiology at the University of Virginia. She previously served as an assistant professor of medicine at the Johns Hopkins University Hospital. Dr. Nohara is board certified in radiology and is a member of the American Society of Neuroradiology and the Society of Neurointerventional Surgery. So, you can do it that way. If all the phones are filled up, and they will be, what you want to do is go online and call us and let us know at voxpop@wamc.org and ask your question that way. And if we can get to it, we will. Right now, there are five free phones. You got a stroke question. This is a good time to ask it. I'll ask one right now while we wait for that first call. Doctor, tell me, what should I do? I'm 73 years old. I'm a little crazy. I'm a little neurotic. I want to walk around and keep my options open as long as I possibly can. Now, my twin brother walks around with a package of crushed aspirin in his wallet. Is aspirin good or bad for you if you feel a stroke having happened?
It's actually a great drug. The aspirin is an old-time drug, but it's very effective. Within 30 minutes, it's effective in starting to disintegrate clot and obviously the propensity for making clot in the first place. I have told my father if he starts feeling a stroke that he starts chewing an aspirin right then and there. There's been some controversy because one of the only ways we used to be able to treat stroke is with IV-TPA, and because of that drug...
IV-TPA being
a drug... Big clot buster, tissue plasminogen activating medication that actually breaks apart clot as it binds to it. And it's a very strong medication that you can get if you come into the emergency room. Some people don't like aspirin in addition to the TPA because they can work, together in a very strong manner. Yeah. But if you're starting to have symptoms, just like with a heart attack, it's not, aspirin is a very good and effective drug in that circumstance. And it may prevent you from having the stroke in the first place, which is better than having to treat it after it's going into its full effects.
Okay, so for all of us hypochondriacs out there, what are the signs that you're having a stroke?
A sudden loss of ability to move, yeah. The sudden loss of ability to feel or speak. I think that speech is slurring of speech or inability to understand somebody speaking to you or the inability to actually form words are the most common things. People, it's hard to see your own face when you're having a facial droop, so that's one of the signs that somebody else might recognize. Mm. But if you start feeling like you're puffing out of one side of your mouth, it may be that you have a facial droop, and that maybe won't be one of the earliest signs.
Now, it has been said that the most important thing if you're having a stroke is to get to the hospital quickly.
Yes.
What's the deal?
Well, time is of the essence, just like it is with heart attack. Some people call, strokes brain attacks. And it is very important to get in a fast time. The interesting thing is that patients who are having a stroke, unlike a heart attack, do not have pain. And they tend to want to go to sleep. So it's really the loved ones that generally bring in the patients with a stroke. And where everybody, I've walked into the emergency room, and I think this is very indicative of what I'm trying to say, is that, you know, I knew I was called, I was coming in for an acute stroke victim, and, you know, I come in and everybody's running to a room. So of course, I thought that must be the room that I'm supposed to be going into. That was the room that there was, you know, a patient was screaming out, having an acute MI at that time, a heart attack. And I was like, and they're like, oh no, yours is over two other rooms. And I go over and there's the wife sitting at the bedside and the my patient, you know, sleeping with his head turned to one side, having a massive stroke. And he wasn't calling out. He wasn't saying anything. And I think that this is the hard part of what I treat, is sure. that patients themselves do not call out, and therefore can be missed, and therefore time continues to progress. And every minute is about, if you're not receiving blood flow, which is the most common cause of stroke, what happens is that 10,000 neurons die every minute that the brain is deprived of that oxygen.
Wow. Is there anything that is indicated for stroke that is not indicated for heart attack? In other words, I always thought there was, I was misinformed, obviously, that aspirin was good for one and not for the other one. But it just turns out, based on what you're telling me, it's good for both. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you might want to do for stroke that you might not, would be contraindicated for, this is a tough question.
That is a tough question.
Yeah, for heart attack.
Well, you know, there are other forms of stroke. There is the hemorrhagic form of stroke, is why some people say that aspirin is not, you know, should not be used, because if you're bleeding, then you don't want to encourage bleeding. So I think
that's bleeding in the brain.
Bleeding in the brain can cause symptoms. Usually patients will present with headache. With that. If you're bleeding into the brain, it hurts. And so if you have somebody coming in with deficits and a headache, it tends to be a bleeding stroke, which is only 20% of all strokes that we see.
You use the word deficits. What does that mean?
Where you can't move, or you can't, those things that we talked about in the beginning, where you can't move, or you don't feel, or you can't speak. Yes.
Okay, we'll go to Jim in Boston Spa. All right, Jim, you're on the radio. What's up?
Yes. Thing out of my pocket. Some years ago, I was in bed. I had a coffee maker at the head of my bed. And I rolled over and turned it on with my left hand. And after the coffee was made, I went to pour it with my right hand. And I could barely do it.
Hey, Jim, get your mouth. Jim, get your mouth as close to the phone as you can. We're having a little trouble.
Several efforts, I finally did it, and I said, wait a minute. So I got out of bed. I thought maybe I was doing something like a stroke. And got out of bed and started for the bathroom, and it's like my right leg as I walked was bouncing off the ground. But I went and took two aspirin and had my daughter, staying there, take me into the emergency room. And by the time I got there, I was fine.
Okay, let's get an answer to this. Go ahead, Doc.
So if you have an episode where you have a lack of blood flow and then the blood flow returns, you can get a resolve of the symptoms that you were having, like the weakness on your right side. Patients can have people can have stenosis in the carotid arteries in the neck, and they can also have them intracranially. These generally fall on genetic lines. Our Caucasian population tends to get atherosclerotic disease, or those plaques in their carotid arteries. Our Asian and our Black communities tend to do this intracranially. And those tend to be where the vessel can be open, but can be blocked off temporarily by even a small blood clot that can then be lyse and then go forward and resolve those symptoms. And those can be treated very effectively with antiplatelet medications such as aspirin, as we talked about.
Interesting. Jim, I'm afraid we're up against the break, so we thank you for your very important call. Appreciate it.
Right.
Okay, we'll take a little break. We'll be right back.
support comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Dine-in, takeout, delivery, 518-432-0358. Ellis Medicine, providing options, support, and help for surgical weight loss at the Ellis Bariatric Care Center, Schenectady, ellismedicine.org. John Keel Music, offering instrument rentals, sales, repairs, and accessories. Locations in Albany, Schenectady, Clifton Park, and Pleasant Valley. Locally owned and operated since 1930. JohnKeelMusic.com. And University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Social Work program, online.unh.edu.
And we are back. And we are back with an amazing doctor today, 1-800-348-2551, Dr. Allison Nohara, interventional neuroradiologist with Vassar Brothers Medical Center in Poughkeepsie. Allison, if I may call you that, and I hope I'm allowed to.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you a question. What do you do? I mean, we have the phones are ringing, so I want to give everybody a chance, but what do? You take a picture to find out what's going on, mm-hmm. right, as a radiologist.
Right.
And then you do something amazing, don't you?
Yes. Well, we take catheters like they do just like what they do for the heart. We take those catheters. We come from generally the leg, and we go up into the arteries in the brain. And for ischemic stroke, as we've been talking about, it's usually caused by a blood clot. And we go up there, and we actually remove those blood clots with different devices. We have a suction device that we can suck out the clot. We also have what's called a stent retriever, which actually opens up the blood vessel, pushes the clot to the side, and then we can extract that clot with that stent retriever into our catheter down to the leg. Actually, the big splash this year has been at the International Stroke Conference. They basically have talked about four studies that have come out internationally looking at removal of blood clot versus that disintegration of blood clot with the medicine TPA that we talked about. And actually, it turns out if you take five people, where you would only get one in five benefiting from the medicine, three in five actually benefit from the mechanical removal. And
From grabbing it,
now, taking it out.
Don't these often start in the leg or in the lung? I mean, you don't want these things going up to the brain or to the lung, right?
Correct. So there's, three major big categories of where these ischemic things occur. One is basically, as we were talking about, those plaques, they can occur on the plaque and get sent up from the carotid into the brain. The other one is, as you were describing, from the body going through the heart, a hole in the heart, or passing through the lungs and getting up into the brain. And then the other one is the small vessels, as we were talking about, the small vessels. And usually those are the toughest ones to treat in the sense that there's not many good treatments for those. But thankfully, usually they're very small, and so the patients do recover from those types of strokes pretty readily.
How did you learn to do this? Were you good at model airplanes?
Well, I've always wanted to be a surgeon. So, but when I saw this, I watched Star Trek as a kid, and I just loved the idea of not actually opening up the body. It would be a great thing not to open up the body and create the damage that we create by doing open surgery. And this became really readily known to me when I was in neurosurgery residency, when people could tell that their skull had been opened and they could hear the whistling and things like that, that bugged them after surgery. And I said, wouldn't it be great if we could do this some other way? And when I saw Dr. Nick Hopkins came down as a guest lecturer, he's now in Buffalo, probably retiring at this point, I think, stating my age here. But he showed how to do this endovascular approach. And I thought this was just the coolest thing to be able to go in, kind of fix the vessels from the inside out, and therefore the patients never needed to have open surgery.
I don't want to be fresh, but do you get a lot of work?
Yes.
How many of these do you do? I mean,
well, fixing aneurysms, for example, I've been doing.
How do you fix an aneurysm?
How I fix it is I put a catheter into the aneurysm itself, and I put very soft platinum coils into that aneurysm. We have bioactive coils. We also have plain platinum coils, depending on what the patient needs. Also, there are flow diverter stents that we can divert flow away from the aneurysm, all based in catheter work, and so we can actually now treat these without having to open the head at at all.
How do I know if I have an aneurysm?
Most people don't know. Obviously, if you go for any type of scans for headaches and things like that, you can actually see incidental aneurysms. If you have ruptured an aneurysm, it's the worst headache of life, and generally people go quickly into the emergency room because it's very hard to deal with.
Kind of thing that FDR had, do you think?
Well, I don't really know. Actually do think he did. I was at his library.
And they said the worst headache he had ever had in his life, and then he died.
And he had hypertension, and he was a smoker. So those go along with that as well. So he may have had an intracranial hemorrhage that was unrelated to an aneurysm, but it is possible he had an aneurysm as well.
Okay, let's go to Landon in Milford. Okay. Landon, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
All right. Hey, how you doing? I'll try to explain, just make this as brief as possible, explain this. In the past, I'm going to say very, very, very seldom. I'm going to say maybe 4 or 5 times in my entire life since I was 19 and I'm 30 now. I had been woken up by a very severe headache, my body curling into the fetal position, numbness, and very slurred speech. It generally goes away after a couple hours, maybe 1-2 hours. I have some water. Calm down, I relax. The first time it happened, I went to the hospital. Obviously, I was panicking. Mm-hmm. I remember at the time they said my heart rate was very low, so I had loss of memory, and they said that had something to do with the blood flow. Okay. I couldn't remember names, things like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went, obviously, I was proactive, and I went and had a Holter meter worn for a day. Mm-hmm. I did an echo stress, and they said your heart is perfectly healthy. You're doing fantastic. It's a shame that nothing showed up during the day you wore the meter. And I'm like, that's it? And like, well, yeah. So someone else had mentioned that maybe it's neurological. The last time it happened, I'm going to say it was about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. It happened in bed, and I was with my wife, so she knew about this. So I told her, I said, okay, get prepared. Let's get a cup of water ready and, some aspirin, things like that. Just kind of get myself ready because I felt it coming on. I usually have a warning, mm-hmm. about 10-minute warning. I start feeling numb and tingly, and my voice starts to get slurred, and my fingers start to curl up kind of strangely. There's not much pain involved now. The headaches aren't as tremendous as they used to be. Where do you think I should start with that? Neurological? Heart? What do you think?
It sounds neuro to me. Not uncommon to see a type of migraine that presents with neurologic symptoms. And that's because the etiology of some migraines actually is a vasoconstriction, meaning that the vessels actually clamp down a little bit, hence the reason why you get the headache and probably why you have that little bit of warning. So that can happen, and that can actually lead, once you have constriction of the blood vessels, obviously you're not getting as much blood flow to the brain as you need. The water is probably helping by trying to kind of, loosen things up a little bit and provide some extra flow, because when you're sleeping, your heart rate is going to be naturally lower, as is your blood pressure. So it's probably helping by getting you up and doing those sorts of things. So that would be my guess, just hearing about it. And so I would start there with a neurologist, see patients for migraines.
Do you know the old saying, STS, which is self-treatment stinks? Should he go to the hospital as soon as he feels something like this?
Well, I would think,
it's debilitating. I would need someone to take me. It's one of those things where I wouldn't be able to operate anything.
Right. And if you've, been through this a couple of times, that would be my, because there are some ways to give you some medications to have you to vasorelax the blood vessels, which may help you to not have such severe symptoms.
But nevertheless, you should go to the hospital.
Or take it as soon as I start feeling the first start of the symptoms so it doesn't get worse. Because like you said, if that's cutting off blood, mm-hmm. I'm losing, I could potentially be causing severe brain damage.
Correct.
Hey, Landon.
I'm talking to you today, so I'm okay. But anyway, yes, thank you.
Thank you for calling, Landon. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
1-800-348-2551. A lot of phones are ringing now, like I told you they would. Did you listen? No. Okay, let's go to RJ in Kingston. All right. RJ, you're on the air.
Hi. It is well known that hyperbaric oxygen chambers restore function in stroke victims. Why isn't it used more often in hospitals?
I actually don't know the answer to that, other than the availability, to be honest with you. I do know that we use the hyperbaric. I'm a diver, so I know we use the hyperbaric chambers for oxygen bubbles in the blood in treating the bends, for example, which actually does result in neurologic symptoms. And I do know that there are other reasons to use them. But like I said, I think it's mainly availability, to be honest with you, and the expertise that goes with performing that on most people.
But they use them for burn victims.
Mm-hmm.
So they are in hospitals, but they don't seem to use them for stroke victims.
Yeah, I think the timing is of the essence when you have a patient with a blood clot in there. Usually it's a blood clot or an obstruction rather than the oxygenation. You're correct in thinking that the oxygenation is important, and that is why the cells are dying in the brain. But what we're really aimed at doing in that immediate time period is actually trying to remove the obstruction to revascularize the territory so that blood flow restores, and therefore the oxygen restores directly.
Okay, RJ, thank you. I wish we could spend more time. Boy, there are a lot of yellow pieces of paper up on the window here. Thank you again. Let's go to Louise in Cheshire, Mass. Okay, Louise, you're on.
Good afternoon, and I appreciate the information that you folks are providing. Hey, so I have a question about, is the doctor familiar with the carotid artery test?
Which carotid artery test are you referring to?
I think it's carotid artery test IMT. Does that sound right?
There's an ultrasound. There's a couple different ones.
Hmm.
Which one? Do you know how?
It's the one where it only takes like 10 minutes and they put the little instrument on next to your neck.
Yep, and you hear the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh sound.
Yes. Thank you for clarifying that.
That's the ultrasound, yes. I am familiar with that. They're looking, basically, it's a surrogate for looking at blood flow, and when the velocity increases, it means that you're going over plaque, and as we talked about, that can become obstructing to flow inside the brain and can also cause blood clot to form on those on that plaque in addition.
Okay, so my husband had it done. He is 56.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the full results,
mm-hmm.
but they scared me and said, the result looks like his arteries are like a 65-year-old.
Okay.
So what should the follow-up be besides following up with your general doctor? What would be the general protocol, kind of, not to be specific? Yeah.
Well, it would depend on the degree of stenosis. Once you get to, generally, if you're below 70% and asymptomatic, so you're not having any symptoms, you just found this because you did the test.
Yeah, that's how we are.
Right. Generally, what you do is you go on aspirin and possibly Plavix, depending on, you know, how everything else looks in the rest of the body. The vessels going to the brain and the vessels in the brain are no different from the rest of the body. So the likelihood is if you have it there in the neck, you probably have it elsewhere. So then it would depend on all of the other symptoms. But generally aspirin is used in this, and as is statins, which are the ones that lower the cholesterol, also depending on the family history that your husband has.
Yeah, his dad had a triple bypass.
Right. And so then you worry also about the coronary arteries in addition. So if the stenosis is greater than 70%, you're starting to get
stenosis. I'm sorry, doc, but stenosis meaning the closing.
The closing, exactly. Yeah. So only 30% of the lumen is open.
Okay.
And that it can be derived from those velocities or by looking directly with another type of test as well. But if it's greater than 70%, then we start looking at how do we repair this artery, and there are two current mechanisms. One is open surgery. The vascular surgeons, it depends on who's working in your territory, but there's vascular surgery does that. Neurosurgery has also done that as well. We do also do carotid stenting for these as well. Putting a stent in the carotid artery, kind of, as my mentor used to say, moving the furniture out of the way, so kind of
right.
Pushing things to the side. But that all depends on the degree of stenosis, meaning how tight and narrow the vessel has become. Over 70%, that's when you start getting real aberrations of flow, and that's when we start to think that, you know, this needs to be more aggressively treated.
You haven't mentioned diet.
For the genetically predisposed patient, diet is very important. So a patient like your husband who has, you know, a family history of coronary artery disease, carotid stroke and carotid artery disease, diet is important. Genetics is the number one. It predisposes us all. It helps us get our cholesterols really high even when we're on good diets. So yes, diet is important. I would say the genetics is far more important when it comes to this disease process.
Or as the old saying goes, can't pick your parents. Thank you, Louise.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Let's go to David. Okay, David, you're on. You're on, David.
I have a twofold question, please. One is the relationship of a transient ischemic attack, known as TIA,
mm-hmm.
to a full-blown stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And as a second part of that question, if there's a contraindication to using Viagra, if you have ever had or are experiencing periodic TIAs.
Right. Well, let me start with the first one. The difference between a TIA is a transient ischemic attack. I call that kind of the shot across the bow. It generally tells us that there's something wrong or vulnerable, potentially, and that we have to look a little closer to make sure that the patient does not have a stroke. If you have a significant TIA where there's actually you've come into the hospital and you've had weakness or and it went away, generally speaking, in the next 6 months to a year, you have a high likelihood of having a repeat TIA or your massive stroke. And obviously, from my perspective, the best time to treat a stroke is before it ever really happens. And so if you have a TIA, I think it's a very good warning sign. Some people say, oh, yeah, I had that, you know, 3 months ago and I never saw a doctor about it. I think it's if you have a TIA that has been diagnosed, you need to go and see somebody, make sure you stratify your risks, as we do have those three big categories, the vessels, the large vessels or the heart, that can be really addressed prior to having, like I said, I call that the shot across the bow.
But part B about, male enhancement pills.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I know all the warnings about using them if you're having, heart attack or stroke symptoms. So I will say that I don't actually know. I know they are nitrous oxide inhibitor, but honestly, which should help in that sense, but I honestly would have to defer to our primary care physicians on this one in terms of how they would manifest with somebody having a stroke.
Well, I have a PhD in political science, but I got to tell you, I think if you're in danger of a stroke, you're out of your mind to use something like that. David, thank you, David, for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is it something I said? Let's go to Patricia in Wallkill. Patricia, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I got the genetic jackpot of having a gene mutation called Factor V mm-hmm. and a couple of others that cause clotting.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm seeing a hematologist who suggested that I go on a blood thinner, and I'm 41 years old, and it kind of scares me to go on a blood thinner at this age. So
right.
I'm just curious, is my risk of stroke that much higher than the average person walking around, and what can I do? I've been told diet really won't help because it's just in my genes, and
yep.
I'm lucky girl to have all this.
Well, you're lucky to find it before it caused any major problems,
right.
to be honest with you.
Right.
So in that sense, you're very lucky. I will say that you are predisposed to having strokes. I have seen different factor deficiencies. Birth control is one of those things I would really warn you against, because it actually increases your likelihood of having blood clots. I have seen patients with the Factor V and on birth control, and they can do some pretty amazing things in terms of clotting off, venous sinuses, which people don't normally consider in an ischemic stroke. They always think of the arteries. And the veins can actually get clogged up and then don't allow the blood to leave the brain, which means that you're not, at some point, you won't get the blood into the brain because you get a backup.
You use the word amazing. You don't mean good. You mean bad.
Bad, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Amazing
yeah.
in a bad way, I guess. But I would say, patients can do different things to try to help with this. If you haven't ever had any symptoms, I think starting with just like aspirin probably would be sufficient. If you have something more definitive, then obviously you need to go on the stronger blood thinners, which are a little scary, to be honest with you, a 40-year-old myself, can be a little bit daunting because you have to worry about them bleeding and all of that sort of stuff.
Right. And so, like, right now I'm on a baby aspirin
mm-hmm.
daily.
Mm-hmm.
My hematologist, I guess because my father had a PE and he's had a history of clotting, and this is why I got tested.
Right.
And, he just seemed like it was a good idea for me to go on a blood thinner, but
mm-hmm.
I still
For the rest
have
of us, what's a PE?
PE is a pulmonary embolus.
Okay.
Yes?
Yes. That's what he had, and it was a very scary thing.
Oh, yeah.
He's very lucky to still be with us. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate the time.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. We'll come around the turn.
support comes from the Stram Center, investigative medicine specializing in Lyme, women's health, gastrointestinal, cancer treatment, acupuncture, and nutrition, located 10 minutes from Albany and in Bennington, Vermont. Stramcenter.com. Washington County Tourism announcing Farm and Fiber Tour, self-guided tour featuring spinning, knitting, and weaving demonstrations, showcasing alpacas, goats, sheep, April 25th and 26th, WashingtonNYCounty.com. The ADK Market, Key, New York, country store featuring natural foods, local and specialty products, fresh baked goods, artisanal beer, and everyday groceries, ADKMarket.com. The Bard MBA in Sustainability, offering a once-a-month MBA program that integrates the study of business and sustainability with full-time and part-time options. Accepting applications for fall 2015. bard.edu/MBA. And Nathan Litauer Hospital, offering new urological treatments with urologist Dr. Paul Husson, nlh.org.
We are back with Dr. Allison Nohara. This has been a great show. Both your parents were doctors, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and so you sort of inherited this love of medicine and
doing, taking care of people.
Taking care of people.
Yes.
Well, it's clear you're good at it. You also are sort of good at Nintendo, aren't you?
You could say that. We were talking about the suite that has been built for me at Vassar. It's a biplane unit where I basically look both from the front and from the side so I can navigate my catheters into the right locations.
Sort of 3D-ish?
Very 3D-ish, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's a tremendous investment from the hospital. It's a $3 million investment in the room, and then our stock is about that as well. So it's really wonderful.
What do you mean your stock?
All of my little toys that I get to work with, my catheters, my those little stent retrievals, those little things that I remove clot with, and also the coils as well. There's a lot of them because you don't know what's going to come. You don't know what the patient is going to need until you're actually looking at. So we have a high inventory because the vessels in the brain are very sensitive, and we have to size everything specifically to each patient.
So let me ask you this: mm-hmm. Would you have come to Vassar had they not built that suite for you?
No.
Interesting. No. Interesting.
Yes.
So you're a hot property. I mean, you know, they would have to spend, anybody to get you was going to have to spend $5 million right off the top.
Exactly. So that's what makes it difficult to actually have one of these programs. You can't just set a doc down in one spot and say, go for it. You have to, it's a tremendous capital investment in the hospital and the infrastructure within the hospital as well.
And how many of you are there in upstate New York?
Well, there are a few of us in upstate New York. If you talk about Rochester and Buffalo, there's a few. Obviously, we have our wonderful colleagues at Albany with Dr. Alan Boulos and his team. And then between there and the city, I'm the only person in that region. So there is a large region. And as we've been talking, when you have a stroke, time is of the essence. So therefore, trying to, move one direction or another is not good. You just should go to, if you can go as local as possible, that's the way to do it.
And the older you get, the more likely it is that you should buy a house right next to a hospital.
Exactly.
Let's go to Howard in Newburgh. Howard, you're on.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question. It seems that the previous person had the curse of from the family. Mine seems to be vascular malformations. Mm-hmm. My mother has had a stroke before she passed away, had a hemorrhage.
Mm-hmm.
Both of her sisters had similar aneurysms and cerebral hemorrhages. Mm-hmm. My maternal grandfather had a renal vascular problem, a hemorrhage in his renal area.
Mm-hmm.
My brother at about 40 had a cavernous malformation that caused seepage into his brain.
Howard, I don't want to be rude, but we got that part. Mm-hmm. Now, what's your question?
The quick story is I had what I thought was a ganglionic cyst in my hand, which turned out to be a malformation. Mm-hmm. Is there something I can do to make sure that that was my only manifestation of the family curse? Is there a test? Is there something?
Actually, in this situation, if you from a family screening standpoint, what I would recommend is an MRI. That's a magnetic resonant imaging of the brain. And basically, that I recommend that because it has very good anatomic detail and there is no radiation to that test. So very little downside to you except for the time in the scanner. But I think it would give you a peace of mind that you don't have. And they can do an MRA in addition to the MRI if you're worried about aneurysm. But vascular malformation in the brain, you'd actually see just on the plain images.
So he's in your area, actually, from Newburgh.
Okay.
So,
is that something that you could do?
Absolutely. You can. We can get you up, and if you, we can absolutely do that and get that scheduled for you.
Thank you, Howard.
Oh, fantastic.
Appreciate it.
I've always been worried about the ticking time bomb. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Go do it. Don't wait. Let's go to Richard in Whitesboro. Okay, Richard, you're on.
Hi. Interesting show. I have a question. There's a stroke center that if it's an hour away, but it can retrieve the clot.
Mm-hmm.
And versus another hospital that's 15 minutes away,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have that equipment. Which one would you go to?
Can I guess, in case you started to come down with symptoms, or
might you go by the symptoms?
Richard, am I allowed to guess? The answer is both.
Right. A lot of times what we do is we do what's called a hub and spoke model where you go into the closer hospital and then you get if they can give you the TPA, they give you the TPA and then they ship you via ambulance to the hospital with the more advanced technology. If it's less of a desperate time, I would say that I would go to the highest if it were me, and I was 45 minutes and half an hour, I take the extra 15 minutes and go to the highest level stroke center that you can because they're going to be more apt to be more aggressive in treating you, even if it's just the IVTPA. If that's all that is required, they're going to be more apt and faster at making that diagnosis and administering that medication to you.
Well, my question on that is, they say you should be, if you can get to a hospital within 4 minutes of a heart attack, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number of minutes for a stroke?
I think that's a good question. I think we're going to be learning that over the next year or two. When we went to the ISC, when they were talking about thrombectomy now being the treatment of choice, we're now starting to learn that, it's less about time, more about collateral flow. And so I think we're going to be, that answer hopefully will be, that question should be answered hopefully sometime this year.
And collateral flow is?
The brain is a little bit different from the heart. There's a lot of blood, there's a lot of arteries that can come around the clogged off pipe and try to revascularize the territory. And if you have those collaterals, they won't last forever, but that's why somebody might not present with such a severe stroke, but still be having a major problem. And like I said, that if they have that collateral flow, they can go a little bit longer because they're getting enough oxygen and sugar to the brain to keep that brain alive.
You are hearing Dr. Allison Nohara. She is a terrific guest, and thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Carolyn in Poughkeepsie. Carolyn, you're
Hi. In. The Hi question had to do with women, symptoms, stroke, heart attack, and also how soon the aspirin and or the other medication needed to be administered, and then thirdly, I was thinking about how fast do they have to do that procedure, special procedure that you are trained in.
Well, I know the difference between men and women in heart attack is quite desperate. There's, very different symptoms. I think it's mainly because women tend to downplay their symptoms. When it comes to stroke, it's hard.
But they live longer.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Estrogen is very protective. But in terms of stroke, the symptoms are very similar between. There's no difference between men and women in terms of their symptomatology. I will say that women tend to continue to do what they always do, which is downplay their symptoms and say, "Oh, I can take care of everything other than myself, my kids, my husband, my whatever." Until it's and that. Like we've been saying, time is of the essence. So if you start having symptoms, you shouldn't downplay them and you need to come in. when you have them. In terms of, we talked about aspirin. Like I said, aspirin, when I test it in our lab, we have a way of testing it. Generally, like I said, within 30 minutes, it's fully effective. So it's a very effective treatment. And I'd say as soon as you start, if there's a symptom of a heart attack or a stroke, it's probably best to just start it right then.
Does aspirin,
so that's a full aspirin, not a baby aspirin.
A baby aspirin is actually, as if, is, in this particular instance, it's dealing with the blood clotting, and 81 is perfectly sufficient.
Even if it's enterocoded?
Enterically coated, actually, if you chew it, you'll probably be okay, because the enterocoda keeps it from digesting. So, yes, enterically coated would actually take a little longer.
Does aspirin age out?
Not really.
No.
Not really.
Interesting. Carolyn,
so
thanks
for expiration date.
Exactly.
What about the drug intervention that you talked about that begins with a T?
You mean the thrombectomy?
Yeah.
The mechanical removal of clot?
No. I think she means the drug.
Oh, the TPA.
Yeah.
The TPA is administered at the hospital, and we have to do it as soon as possible. And it can only be given up to 4.5 hours after symptoms.
And the thrombectomy?
Thrombectomy, we go up to 8 hours.
Okay.
Angela, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Ruth on the thruway, I believe. Okay. Go ahead, Ruth. This is a very very important question, because I had it too. Go ahead.
Yes, I had an episode about 18 months ago.
An episode of what? Of what?
Pardon? Transient global amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And went to the hospital and had all kinds of tests, and the effects were completely gone within 24 hours. But I wanted to know how this particular event fits into the spectrum of TIA and stroke and that sort of thing. And I'd like to listen on the radio instead of on the phone, because I can't hear very well.
Okay,
we're driving. We're on the road. I'm not driving.
Okay, good. Ruth, thank you very much. Listen up.
Okay.
Here we go.
So
that's very interesting, because you got to explain to people
what transient
global amnesia is. I went through it, mm-hmm. and you lose a couple of hours from your life, don't you?
Right. So basically, it's an episode where you don't have memory of amnesia or memory loss, and it's to everything.
You're talking to somebody,
right?
And then your wife comes up to you later on and says, "What were you talking to them about?" I said, "Who?"
Exactly. And I think the scary part about this is that you can have in the back of our brain, which feeds to the brainstem, if there is ischemia in that territory, you can get an episode like this. So one of the things you worry about when you see a patient that's had this is that are they having symptoms from the of ischemia or transient ischemic attack in the back of the brain, where it's not affecting movement, but it's affecting memory. And this amnesia that we're talking about.
But I did read somewhere, and then as soon as we're done here, I'm going to the hospital. but I did read somewhere that people have this once. They generally don't get it a second time.
You know, I would have to defer that to my neurology colleagues on this one. I have seen this in basilar stenoses, and it's what the neurologists worry about. And when you don't have that, I'm not sure exactly, but I think it sounds reasonable.
Thanks a lot. Okay, that was who was that? Okay, we'll go to
that was Ruth.
Yeah, Ruth. Okay, thank you. You see, no memory. We'll go to Angela in Pittsfield. Angela, you're on.
Yeah, this is, I guess, a roundabout question. My other half. He's scheduled to go see a heart specialist. They think he has Prinz metal or variant angina, and I was looking at some of the. I was going online trying to find what they're going to do and how I can't figure out yet how they're going to figure out if that's what it is. But some of the meds they're offering, he also suffers from migraines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm worried about them forcing extra blood flow and stuff. What kind of questions should he ask or things should he be aware of?
Well, I think he should just be, you know, make sure that they know he suffers from migraines. Like I said, I think what we talk about with migraines is a vasoconstriction. And so you don't want to have, where he's vasoconstricted heavily. But most of the time for the heart, they need blood flow too. So they're not going to try to overconstrict him is my thought. But he just needs to be very open, just as we have to with everything when we're talking to our physicians, because they need to know what we're taking and what we're doing so that they can make the right choices when they put him on medications.
What's the number one thing that they should be telling you that they're not, doctor?
Well, most for me is mostly use of illegal drugs, methamphetamines, and things like that.
And that does it, right?
It's methamphetamine particularly is very dangerous for the blood vessels. It disintegrates them in a way. And so a lot of our aneurysm patients are on methamphetamine. And when they don't tell me, it's when I have to go and navigate through the vessel and I think that it's normal, it can be quite dangerous. And
so you asked the question, though.
I certainly do.
Yeah, sure.
You don't always get a truthful answer to it.
No, I guess you don't. Okay, Angela, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Robert in Pittsburgh. Robert in Pittsburgh, you're on.
Hi. Well, I'm actually from Pittsburgh. I'm in the Berkshires right now visiting my mother.
It's better in the Berkshires. Go ahead.
Well, it's not. I was planting strawberries and everything yesterday, so. And I'm not doing that here, I'll tell you that. Anyways, make it very quick and short. I'm about 50 years old. My mother, she's had a heart attack when she was 60. My father died of a stroke when he was 72. My brother had a severe stroke when he was 40. Hmm. The only difference between them and me is they all smoked heavily, and I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. Does that make any difference?
Absolutely. Do not start smoking.
I have no intention of that.
Yeah. Well, we can go back to the Framingham studies back in the 60s, looking at the correlation between, you just heard me talking about the genetics of atherosclerotic disease and plaque formation, but we all know that there are life. You know, we talked about diet, but I will say the negatives, like smoking, are far more important. If you smoke and you have atherosclerotic disease, it is far worse because your deposition, the injury to the vessel walls actually occurs from the smoking, and then that allows the plaque to come and start to form. So it comes earlier, and it comes at a much more aggressive pace when you're smoking.
Should I still be worried, basically, or no?
You have the genetics, and so, you can be screened with that ultrasound, for example, as the one of the guests was talking about, which is, a non-invasive way of testing. MRI is also very, appropriate because, again, these carry no radiation risks, and they are non-invasive ways of imaging to see if you have any vascular lesions.
Robert, we've got one more customer after you, so we want to go. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You,
Robert. And we have one more person, and that is going to be Tom from Poughkeepsie. But given a choice, what's worse, smoking or an egg yellow?
Or what?
An egg yellow, the yolk of an egg.
Oh, smoking. Yeah. Absolutely. There's good things in those egg yolks. A lot of omegas.
Okay. Let's go to Tom in Poughkeepsie. Tom, you're on.
Hello, doctors. I have had a stroke in the thalamus. It has left me with a hypersensitivity on the left-hand side, more severe in the hand and face than the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm.
The conditions or the symptoms have expanded, so it feels like, it left me with a hypersensitivity and a tightness in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
There's no physical restriction or there's no loss of many mental cognitive this, as far as I
Hey, Tom,
know.
We're running out of time, yep. Is there a question? Yeah.
Yeah, the question is, what do you think that I should do at this point because I felt the symptoms increase?
Okay.
Should I have more tests done, and what should those tests be?
Well, I would probably, in this, was it a bleeding type of stroke? Do you know?
No, they said it was a collapsed vein.
Okay. Then what I'd probably recommend is an MRI and an MRA to look at your vasculature in the territory and also look at the stroke again itself to make sure that it's not expanded in any way.
And an MRA is?
An MRA is a magnetic resonant angiogram.
Oh, angiogram.
So okay. It's just basically you sit in the scanner for a little bit longer and they look at your vessels.
And Tom, guess what? You're in luck. You're right around the corner from doctor.
Yes.
I am. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
A lot. Well, this has been a great show, and we're out of time. We didn't leave anybody on the line. That's great. I want to thank Dr. Allison Nohara for joining us today. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, and I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Doctor said, you know, this was a very intelligent crew that kept calling all day, and I certainly think that's true. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. And Dr. Nohara, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Will you come back again?
Absolutely.
Okay, stay tuned now for a news update.